This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, the president's approval rating sinks, and Ralph Nader uses the N-word. From our NPR studios in Washington is Jeff Johnson, host and producer of the Cousin Jeff Chronicles on BET. At our member station WGBH in Boston, Callie Crossley. She's a Boston-based social and cultural commentator. She can also be seen on the television show Beat the Press in Boston. And George Curry joins us. He's editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association, and he is in Maryland. All right, folks, let's first take a look at the numbers that we're seeing from many, many polls across the country that do not show this president in good standings in many fields, that he had been moved forward and certainly had higher numbers than we are seeing now. This is, George Curry, not uncommon for a second-term president, but these are mighty low numbers.
Yeah, you're right. It's not uncommon. And you also got to realize, too, that even some members of his party who had been supportive realize they got to run for re-election. And so that's why you even see some Republicans saying we got to set a date certain that we got to pull out Iraq, which is something that was unthinkable of being said by a Republican a year ago. So I think we see that. We see the numbers are down. The numbers weren't all that bright even before, but they're way down.
Jeff, before we get into specifically what your thoughts are, let me give some of the numbers. More than half of the public disapproves of the job that the president is doing in general. Only 39% approve of his handling of the economy. 39% approve of his handling of foreign affairs. 37% approve of the handling of the war in Iraq. And only 25% approve of his handling of Social Security. And the biggest drop-off there, Jeff, is among Americans 30 to 44.
Absolutely. I mean, very clearly, just to speak to the last point, which is Social Security, it's clear that young people, which I think were supposed to be carrying the water for this privatization and creating individual accounts, isn't buying it. And so there are those that were tempted to be convinced that the change in the modification in Social Security to private accounts was the way to go. But we're realizing that even young people understand that the reason Social Security was created was to save us from a market-driven economy, not to put us back into a place where our retirement and our futures are determined by one. And so that issue, I think, is just one of many where we've seen not only young people and younger people turned off by some more extreme recommendations, but I think others that liked what the president has said but has not seen it come to fruition in the way that he explained it.
I would have to add to that, and let me just expand that. I agree with what Jeff has said. I think that people are really, in general, whatever their age is, upset about a complete, or what it seems to be a complete focus on Iraq and issues beyond our borders. And I think they're upset about what seems to be just sort of an intense focus, blindsided on everything domestic that has to do with Social Security and not about the economy. I mean, 25,000 people laid off from GM. If that's not the biggest bell ringing, I don't know what is. And people at home are saying, hello, what's happening here?
But, you know, Callie, and let me raise this to all three of you. I don't necessarily hear that. I mean, it seems as though it's a silent assassin for many in this country, the economy. You know, you look at, as you've mentioned there, the layoffs, you look at gas prices, you look at interest rates that have sustained themselves, but without jobs, you know, it doesn't matter if you've got a low interest rate. You can't afford a home. You can't afford the deck on the home, the second car, the things that through the course of the last decade so many people had been accustomed to, George Curry. What seems to be the issue here?
Well, I think that what's the whole fight on terrorism has overshadowed some of these issues. I mean, they are there, they are strong, but when you look at that same those same numbers you were talking about a while ago, the fight against terrorism got, in fact, I think it's probably the only area that got really, really more approval than disapproval. So I think that people realize we're in a war mode, that we're concerned about terrorism, and these other issues are there, and we saw that played out in the last presidential election. They're there, but they are being superseded by this war.
Well, Ed, and if I can interject, this is Jeff. I hate to be a media basher, but I think one of the things that we're also seeing is that there are very few media outlets, save shows like yours and others, that are really pushing the light on the fact that there are other issues that are out there. There are people that are crying out from the ground up that are concerned with issues of the economy, that are concerned with issues of education, that are concerned with issues of jobs. And so I don't think it's about being a silent assassin. I think that those that have been charged to report holistically on what the state of the country is don't often do that.
Well, I disagree. I think that they do. I think they do report it. I don't like to report when it's coming out to the White House, because the president here, as isn't often the case in the past, gets a pass on a lot of things. I think these issues are there, but they're not getting traction.
I think that because of that, the reason is that I think lots of folks don't believe it. But let me go back to that GM number. When you talk about 25,000 people being laid off, you're not talking about just small clumps of individuals. Now you're talking about unraveling communities and everybody else's base of income. And I think where they may have been silent to date, they're going to start expressing some of the anger, the discontent, and the fear, really, about what's going to happen to them here.
Well, it will be interesting to see if, in fact, we start to hear that noise get a little louder. Let's move our attention to something that happened last Wednesday night in Washington. It was at a fundraiser for Ralph Nader in an attempt to retire some of the debt from his run for the 2004 presidential campaign. He was talking about how Democratic Party power brokers kept him off the ballot in southern states like Georgia and Virginia. He said that it reminded him of the oppressive Jim Crow laws, and that he, quote, I felt, this is what he said, I felt like an N-word, remarking that. Here is a man who, by most accounts, including Al Sharpton's, who chimed in here, saying that Ralph Nader is not a racist by any stretch of the imagination. He has a good track record, but he ought to be sensitive that he does not use this word and does not sanitize in Sharpton's way and the word, and I can't say it on the air, but N-word. Jeff, is this surprising to you to hear from Ralph Nader just off the cuff?
I was a little surprised that he used it. I thought that he was traditionally more sensitive. But I think that anybody who is in a position where they're attempting to create hype oftentimes does things that are controversial. I don't think that he should be given a pass. And I think the larger issue is, even in his defense of using the word, he said that he attempted to use the word in the same spirit of the Panthers, which to me was even more insulting. And so I think we just need to be very clear that, I think as Sharpton said, not only is he not a Panther, but we just need to be very clear that I did a show on this.
Yeah, I was going to raise that, Jeff. You did a great documentary on BET about the N-word, and part of what you looked at is whether or not now, in the open use of it, particularly among young African Americans, that it has, to a great degree, lost the stigma, even amongst whites, in terms of using it in public.
Well, and in the show, we attempted to try to create a real comprehensive conversation. If you ask me my opinion, I think at the end of the day, young people in the hip hop in many cases have gotten it wrong in thinking that because they've embraced it, changed the spelling of the word, it's been redefined. And the argument is, and I don't want to get too far off into this, hip hop has been able to change definitions of words. And so when people say ice, people know they're talking about diamonds or whip. They know they're talking about cars. But when we say the N word, there are still people out there that clearly understand that doesn't mean you're my friend. And so we have not changed the definition of the word. It has not lost its historical impact. And we as a people cannot get lost into believing that because so much time has passed, there are still not things that we should never embrace as acceptable.
Well, see, this is where we have a problem. You can't. It is rough to go out there and say you want to criticize Ralph Nader and you're using the word freely yourself. You just cannot have a double standard on it. It's a bad word to use, period, and you don't redefine it. And that's, and so in a way, some of these young rappers and other people in their so-called defiance are really almost giving somebody a pass for it, because you cannot say it's all right for me to use it, and it's, but you cannot use it. It's one of the most obnoxious words in the English language.
I agree. And I would also add, I was just looking at deaf poetry the other night, and I listening to the poetry of some of the really talented artists, and yet they felt they needed to use the word to express themselves, when if you took it out, it would be just fine. So that's one point that I wanted to make. But my second point is, I have to say that I'm angrier about folks like Ralph Nader, who ought to know better. I have a lot less sympathy, not more, because you know better. So I don't appreciate it at all. You know what it means to use the word.
But what if he's trying to drive home a point? What if he's trying to drive home a point? What if he's trying to suggest that this was like the oppressive Jim Crow laws that denied African Americans equal rights, and that at that point in time, that is the word that would have been used?
Ed, you don't need to use that word to make the point. There's so many other ways to make the point. You can say I was treated like a slave. You can say I was treated like a black person in Mississippi in 1800. There are so many ways.
And
if you graduate from Princeton and Harvard Law School,
I think you can find another word.
Exactly.
Thank you. And Ed, what was wrong with the way you described it? That's what he should have said, if that's what he felt. What are you using a word
for? I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here, people. Well, that's all
devil
I'm trying to
need
do.
Devil does not need an advocate. It devil has plenty of advocates.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's move on before I get in trouble, because you know, George, I need all the prayer I can get. Here's a question, a moral one, as we wrestle with Terri Schiavo and the like. There's a Virginia woman that was being kept alive because she was pregnant, and they are trying to bring the baby to term. Yet there are those who suggest that this is yet another way of people playing God, and that you have to let life play itself out naturally. Callie, when you look at this instance and situation, what's your thought?
Well, I have two thoughts. First, I feel just so much emotion for the husband in this case, whose whole life has changed since his wife has been put on life support. On the other hand, from a not emotional standpoint, I know that we can't be legislating policy one emotional case at a time. And that we really have to take a moment to step back and ask the bigger questions about what does this mean in terms of resources? What are we saying as a nation about, you know, how we feel about these cases? Is it an individual's right to choose and to make a decision? Okay, well, if he made his decision, what was wrong with what Terri Schiavo's husband and his decision? I mean, we can't just be zigzagging about and making exceptions here and there. There's got to be some kind of overarching policy.
I think what we need to do is step back and step away from people who have to make personal decisions that are wrenching as this one. The husband said he believed his wife would have wanted to have the baby, and the only reason she's being kept around so that that they have a chance of producing that baby. That is a tough call to make, but I think it's his call to make.
Ed, this is Jeff. I also think we're going up a slippery slope when we continue to insert ourselves into these very personal decisions. How do we determine which ones we step into and which ones we don't? Because we clearly understand that Schiavo and this young woman are not the only people that are on life support. And how do we determine who we're talking about and where we begin to insert the long arm of the legislature and even the media into the personal lives and decisions of average citizens? I think that this really, in my opinion, speaking on the emotional side, is about life and is about the opportunity for a family to lose one life and gain another, as opposed to losing two. And if we really removed ourselves sometime from the higher perch and just dealt with each other on a human level, we would realize that we're really talking about the life, a father having the opportunity a day after Father's Day to have a child come into the world that otherwise wouldn't be able to be there.
I think, I mean, that's great. But I think what the problem is, Jeff, is that people have made kind of personal determinations about the decisions that both these men made. I mean, Terri Schiavo's husband. People portrayed him as sitting on the right hand of Satan for the decision that he made. He felt he was preserving her life, if you will,
their business.
Yeah,
it's really
you're exactly
not their
right.
business.
Okay,
and that's
right,
my
that's
point.
That's right. Okay, I'll go with that. That's exactly right.
But George, don't we see this throughout the history of this country? There are those who rail against these kinds of situations. You can even take it to the question of euthanasia. You can take it to the question of capital punishment. And you see many of these people marching in front of the hospitals, in front of the jails with signs. It is part of what, quote, makes this country great. Yet there are those who drive by the roadside and tell these folks, hey, get a life.
Sure they do, and a lot of men do that, and they can't produce a baby anyway, and so they shouldn't even be out there. This is a very, very personal choice, and it's interesting that the man had a hypothetical case like this in high school, but it's not a hypothetical anymore. This is reality. He has to make some tough choices. They already have a 2-year-old kid. He's comfortable with the decision, and everybody else should just butt out.
All right, and lastly, let me ask you this very quickly with about 30 seconds for each one of you. We are seeing Congress led to some degree by Charles Rangel suggesting that there should be a true investigation to find out whether this president has, in fact, gone too far with this war. You know, it goes back to the whole question of who knew what and when. How much do you believe Congress should look into this now?
Oh, I don't think it's going anywhere. I mean, I really don't think it's going anywhere. And I don't know Democrats get a whole lot of political capital even by dwelling on it. What Americans need is an alternative plan, not just a criticism of the other party. What kind of plans do you have to revive the economy, to even if necessary, bring a close to that war and deal with bread and butter issues that people care about on the domestic front? What's the alternative?
George, I agree with some of what you're saying, but I also think we have to understand that there are 1,700 confirmed dead and 12,000 confirmed injured that really the president has to be accountable for. And so while I do agree with you that not only the Democrats have to be very clear in creating a strategy that speaks to the issues that the country is facing, and the broader country, the government needs to be in a position where we start having a clear exit strategy from Iraq. I think we've got to be in a place where someone is held accountable for the lives that have been lost and the reason why those lives were lost.
Callie, really, with about 10 seconds, real quick for me.
I think for history's sake, one should know the answer. Was this really the way it happened, as according to the Downing memo, or not? Question about whether or not we should be doing it now is open.
All right. Jeff, Callie, George, thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.